My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, week 11 is in the books. If there's one thing that stood out to me about the NFL this weekend, seemed to be a whole lot of confrontation. We had Tennessee mixing it up with Baltimore before the game. We had Sean Payton and Roddy White going at it on the internet, and a whole other host of things happening. So I thought of Drew Hodgdon, a guy who, much like myself, was kind of a fiery youngster at one point, but then grew and matured and grew wiser, maybe less temperamental. But we've got a past. And I wanted to talk to Drew about that, as well as a whole lot of other things. Plus, I'm having hernia surgery tomorrow, so I'm a little bit distracted. And Drew always makes me laugh. So I thought, what better time for myself and my beloved listeners to have a good laugh than right now before I have hernia surgery? Some of you who follow me on Instagram might have seen the video where I explained how I passed out when they were explaining the surgery to me. I get a little bit queasy about anything involving my innards. So let's talk and hang out with Drew Hodgdon instead. Oh, and I started out asking him about his screen name on Zoom, Captain Coconuts. Captain Coconuts?
Yeah. that's the code word.
Do you use that for work?
No. I should have changed that.
We're with Captain Coconuts. I'm getting hernia surgery tomorrow, so I'm a little bit
distracted. Shit.
One of the things they warned me about was that I should wear compression shorts because my coconuts might swell up like in Johnny Dangerously.
Did they make clear you have normally excessively large balls?
So they're like, yeah, look, we know that your compression shorts are already stretched to their limits. So maybe wear two. Yeah.
We noticed something during the pre-surgery exam. You're going to have to wear some better shorts.
Yeah. It's weird. I passed out when they were explaining the surgery to me a couple months ago or a month or so ago. And I don't know. I still to this day, they didn't think there was anything wrong with it. So it was like complete, it was fight or flight response that I had. Right. He was showing me, did you even know that they're like little muscles? This makes total sense. And I feel like an idiot for not knowing it. There are little muscles that pull your balls up when your balls retract. I always thought it was just like the scrotum shrinking that pushed your balls up. But there's tiny little muscles that yank them back to safety. Like a mother pulling her child away from a train track.
Have you never heard from any of your teammates or center buddies? What happens when you play center?
Do you get hernias a lot?
You don't get hernias, but you get elevated testicle syndrome.
Shut up.
I'm being completely serious.
What happens?
It started happening my sophomore year of college, and I would get into practice, and then it became right before the snap, every time my balls would shoot up into my stomach. And I would stop and I was like,
shut up.
What the fuck is going on? And I went over to the team doctor and I was like, dude, I'm having like something weird is happening. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, dude, my balls are like all up in there. And now it's like they're mostly kind of in there like all the time.
All the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's weird.
Like they're not like hanging down like normal. And I like went to I went to Muntz and was like, dude, is this like a thing? And he's like, dude, it is very common. Very common.
Does it disrupt your sperm production?
It can.
Yeah. Have you ever bothered to get that check, or do you just assume it's natural birth control and raw dog it?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's both that, but I also am like, I'm just such an alpha male that it offsets whatever like the normal percentages that I just yeah. assume. I'm so virile that it's like, it's probably good for the best.
You didn't want to punch a hole through a poor lady with a for this. So that's common with centers?
Yeah, that's what they told me. They were like, in which I haven't actually like talked to like my buddy who ended up playing. Oh, you probably... I guess you wouldn't have played against him. Yeah. Mike Pollock, but he played guard for Indianapolis for.
Yeah, I remember them.
Like 7-8 years. He was the center after me at ASU and he had the same problem.
God, I wish I would have known that. Like when I was facing centers, like which ones I could have played on their insecurities about their tiny testicles.
Yeah, he totally would have been like, dude, I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but like it looks weird from here. It just looks weird.
Do you even? I was talking to somebody about jock straps the other day, and I don't think anybody wears jock straps anymore, do they?
Dude, that is one of the best. Like, there are two persistent myths, I think, for people that never played football that are just like don't seem to go at one is that we all did ballet to get good at football.
Oh, because that was a Lynn Swann thing. Like, yeah, Lynn Swann did it like twice in some offseason back in the day.
Yeah.
People assumed. And then every now and then there'd be some college offensive line that whose coach would have them do it. So
okay, it's like
so,
one out of three people. They're like, oh, you play football. They're like, did you do ballet? Like yeah. always. That's like one of, and then the other one is like, dude, is wearing a jockstrap weird? And I'm like, I had never fucking wore one. I don't know. I think
I did. And I was an old man because of it. Like people thought I was, I could tell that was when it was Tom Brady's probably the only person that still might wear one.
You wore one?
I did the whole time I played. And you know what was dumb? I wore a jock strap because at Cornell, they just handed them out. And I was like, okay, I guess we wear jock straps. We had like polyester shorts, like not the good polyester, like polyester that would chafe your inner thighs. Great, I'm squatting, I'm getting huge and bloody. I started menstruating my freshman year in college.
Yeah, you're bleeding from your taint.
I squatted 600 and menstruated on the same day.
Like, Seth, your grundle is bleeding. I don't know if you know that. I've never seen that before. It's completely normal.
I wore it, and guys started teasing me about it, and I didn't think anything of it. Like, by that point, I was old school.
Did you put a cup in it?
No. That's another misconception is that football players wear cups. And I don't think anybody
does. Is it literally so it's like holding just your junk?
Just to keep your balls safe. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think back in the day, if you think about the guys in the 70s when they would wear those short shorts, like.
Think about it all the time.
Honestly, think about what you've seen in the locker room and then think about how well those short shorts might have contained some of those physical anomalies.
That's how I always looked at it. I was always like, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm working with that kind of gear. That is just not, we don't have these problems.
There's a constant ego check being in an NFL locker room.
Exactly. I was like, dude, we don't have these problems.
Like, I don't know. My girlfriend would think that's gross. I'm sure.
Totally.
Glad I don't have that.
So much extra work. Like, yeah, fine. Like every girl I've dated where they're like, oh, wow. Like, no, you're doing it. And I'm like, let's not. But don't bullshit me. It's fine.
Did you happen to see? You saw Anthony Weaver like angrily defending his guys. And I guess what I didn't tell you about. Let's play this right now.
Yeah, we got to not give up 60-yard runs at the end of the game, Aaron. This narrative that's being painted like my guys are undisciplined and running around blocks, quite frankly, and if you put it bluntly, is bullshit. My guys play hard. They battle. They're doing the absolute best they can, and they leave their everything they have on that football field to go out there and stone the run. We lost the game 10-0. Yeah, you could say it's been 17-0. All right, but we expect to go out there and stop the run every time we do it. But to sit here and paint this narrative, there was a question asked to Romeo the other day about the accountability of the defense. Are they accountable? Hell yeah, they're accountable. Anybody that's worked for me, anything I've done in my entire life has been accountable. And if that's ever questioned, then I'll resign. Okay? But these guys battle. They fight. They're doing everything they can to go out there and stop the run. And we're going to try to do it again this weekend.
So this is the interesting thing about this, Drew. And in Houston, we talked about this, but I wanted to get your perspective on it. Weaver and Romeo Crennel at various times have talked about gap discipline. and like all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he starts like angrily defending his guys. And what I thought was, okay, this is his strategy for the week because these guys are embattled. And they were playing, I don't want to say soft because I don't think there are a bunch of soft guys on that defense, but they were not necessarily playing with great gap discipline. And I think that Weaver was at that point where he said, all right, it's just all or nothing at this point. Our backs are against the wall and we're just going to go into this bunker mentality. And this is the really interesting thing. Back in the day, a coach might try to send a message through the traditional media. I think Weaver understands, and I haven't texted or called Weaver about this because 3 days before he put that video out, I did a video on television about how the Texans lacked cap discipline. So I'm watching that video and I'm like, oh.
like, am I being spotlighted?
Yeah. But like I said, Romeo and Weaver themselves have talked about this before. And I think that he was just kind of sending a message to his guys because that went somewhat viral on social media, at least amongst guys. You know that guys' friends sent that to him and everything. And after the game, Jordan Reed actually said that, you know, yeah, Weaver's a guy that's got our back and everything. And what do you think of that strategy?
I mean, I think it makes sense. I also think like the insight that guys like, not as much you because you actually had the benefit of being on teams that weren't horrendous. But the majority of my career, I was only on bad teams. So mm-hmm. I really bring that kind of insight and experience to a conversation like this.
Yeah, so that's like, what, no, yeah. Actually, there is something to be said for that. Like when Kubiak came in the first year that Kubiak was coaching, I was like, Coach, you got to settle down. You've been on good teams too long. You could see his brain was frying because he hadn't dealt with this. He'd been with San Francisco and then Denver. They never have back-to-back losing seasons or anything. But so I know where you're coming from. I know you're joking a little bit, but there is something about that.
No, there is. There's something to be said for it, which is why I think you guys, you know, I don't want to, I'm not going to act like every free agent that came on the team that was Ed Reed that came in and then struggled immediately. But it's like, there's something to be said when you've never been on a bad team or even Deshaun Watson, who's probably only ever really won at a really high level. And then he's having to experience just a brutal, long season. What is just back-to-back losses. And I know they won this past weekend, but it's like, you're really throwing anything at the wall at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you can to elicit a response, you probably don't really give too much, you know, of an S about like what the media is saying when you're trying to make sure your guys are either motivated. It's like, no kidding, they don't have good discipline. Yeah, we're 3-7. Of course they don't have good gap discipline. Like bad teams do bad things.
That was what was so cool about it was – like none of it made any sense except that, you know what, this is because I did the same thing once when we went 2-14. I walked into a defensive backs meeting room and, you know, one of the guys in there was taking a lot of heat because he basically dove away from a tackle instead of making a tackle on the goal line. And I basically acted like all those punks out there don't know what the hell anybody's talking about. We're all together. We're all in this together, you know, and it didn't work. We still sucked afterwards. But but in this instance, you're right. You get to week 10 or 11 and you've only had a couple of wins. You start running out of pep talks. Like you said, you're throwing anything you can up against the wall. I liked it. And they came out and they played their asses off. That's why I thought of Weaver and you. Because you and I were buddies, obviously, when we were playing. You were an offensive lineman, I was a defensive lineman. But the year that Weaver came in, Weaver came from Baltimore, where in Baltimore, that was still an old school team where there were fights in practice, like quite a bit. And the defensive line's whole rule was, hey, if one defensive lineman gets in a fight, we're all going in. And they had Kelly Gregg, who is a nose tackle who'd been a national champion wrestler in college and was into MMA in the offseason.
I practiced against him when I went to Baltimore.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, he's no joke. No. He's the real deal.
Yeah.
So when Weaver got here, his whole thing was, hey, if anybody gets in a fight, we all jump in. And I remember you and Travis Johnson got into a fight in practice one day, and I ran in, and I still feel bad about this.
I remember this.
I don't remember. I grabbed you or something, and you turned and looked at me like I was Brutus.
Yeah, 100%. I looked at you like I was Ned Stark, and I was just betrayed. I was absolutely stunned because I felt like there was one guy on the defensive line that I could trust. He was just gonna, be led by their emotions around by the nose. That was just I cannot believe you betrayed me in this way. Yeah, I was stunning. I was stunned.
It's funny though. That's different from like team culture to team culture. Because when I was in Jacksonville, we fought a lot.
Yeah.
And like I would say, I probably averaged like 1.5 fights per year in practice when I was in Jacksonville. My rookie year, I got in a few. Then I might not have gone a year, and then I got in a couple fights with. A lot of times, it was rookies. You'd fight rookies because they were. Not going too hard, but going too stupid, like off balance and holding you after you beat them, just stupid stuff that gets people hurt.
Yeah.
And, but then we got to Houston and Capers was really against it. So we'd lost it in the culture and then Weaver brought it back. So when I saw that fieriness, a lot of people in Houston don't really think of Anthony Weaver as being as fiery a guy as he is, but he can really turn it on and off.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always actually shocked when I got to Houston and it wasn't more that way. I expected it to be more because that was sort of my personal brand, at least when I was, and that was our identity when I was in college. And then I got there and I would start fights and people would do that thing where they would look at me like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I was just like, I see.
I wonder if that was like one of the problems from the very start of the franchise. Maybe that's why there's too many goody two shoes there. And that's like
I feel like it was just because there's, as professional as it is in the NFL, it's kind of like, I feel like you still have to go through that stretch where you're still a little grimy and gritty and rough around the edges. And then you've earned your stripes and then you can be, it becomes part of the culture there. And when push comes to shove, you can dig in there and you can behave that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the Texans ever went through that trial by fire where they got it and then moved on to being more professional and regimented.
It was all, from the very beginning, the thing that I always hated was that the quarterbacks were under strict instructions not to tease or haze whatsoever David Carr. Like even friendly stuff that quarterbacks do, some of the veterans like Tony Banks and those guys in that room. And I don't know, man, there was always this culture of some of those young guys. We started six guys on offense, the rookie years in that first season. And there was almost just a little bit of, it's what they say about UT, like a sense of entitlement also, almost like some of the recruits feel like they're hotter crap than they already are.
I feel like they always treated his personality like it was made of glass. His ego could not. And if there's one thing I've learned, just even from being there and then watching afterwards, even just as like a general spectator, is the ones that do well are the ones who just have ice water running in their veins.
Yeah.
Like it's not their arm strength. It's just the fact that they are not going to be, they're not going to panic at all and under any situation. And that was not really his experience.
Yeah, they're psychotically self-confident, like in whatever insecurities they have, they cover it up by being psychotically self-confident. It's that like weird mixture of whatever insecurity really makes them like drives them and makes them super competitive, they balance it out with like an incredible confidence. And they're really good quarterbacks are like that.
Being on a good team is being part of a cult.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's why I don't mind. Like sometimes these cultish college guys like Dabo Swinney. Yeah, go for it. Be a cult. Cults are effective at doing what you can. They convince people to castrate themselves and that they're going to hop on a comet after they commit suicide. That's an incredible thing to convince somebody of. You think if you can convince people of that, convincing them to win a football game is no big deal at all.
Yeah, totally. Go for it. Like, go all the way. Maybe they will.
Did you, when you were at Arizona State, because you were there with Terrell Suggs, it seems like Terrell Suggs would be a big fighter.
He really wasn't. He was actually more of like a diva prima donna, and he would be shocked if anyone tried to fight him. So naturally, I would try to fight him constantly. So
yeah, really? Like,
that's how that worked. I always felt like it was my obligation. There weren't too many opportunities because I was at center.
Yeah.
You know? But if I ever caught him on like a TE or something, it was like lights out.
Did he, wait, didn't you guys room together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When, like your freshman year or later on?
Freshman year. Yeah, he was not a real human being. I mean, he was one of those kinds of personalities where I remember like he knocked on my door our first year, and there was a lot of buzz about him because he really came in as like a running back. He was one of those guys where he was this like 6'3", 230-pound, like All-American running back in Arizona, and they thought, okay, this guy at defensive end is going to absolutely light people up. And he came in and he just had a huge chip on his shoulder, and he knocked on my door after like 2 days. It was like 10 PM. He was like, "Hey man, are you up?" And I was like, "No, I mean, I was trying to sleep, but yeah, what's going on?" He's like, "And I was just thinking about this. Like, people say Rocky is Italian, but he's white." And I was like, this is just going to be the worst roommate situation ever. I can tell this is how this is gonna go.
Did you like, sit down and explain to him the vagaries?
There's a difference between like ethnicity, nationality, and what. And I was like, I don't even, you know. And I know a week from now when you ask me about how gorillas have disposable thumbs that I should not be surprised.
Oh, disposable thumbs. Yeah.
Well, and it was crazy because he was just like a prodigy. He understood a playbook better than anyone else on the team.
Really?
He looked at it like I think prodigies look at sheets of music.
Yeah.
He just understood it immediately. I mean, he really did. It wasn't just that he had phenomenal get off and pass rush moves or instincts. I mean, he understood the defense. So it was incredible right out of the gate. I mean, he was just lighting people up.
What was the other thing I thought about you for? Oh, Tennessee and Baltimore going at it before the game, since today's theme is kind of fighting and confrontations.
Yeah,
and then after the game, John Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel kind of had a half handshake. They both said afterwards that it was no big deal. I put myself in John Harbaugh's shoes, and I felt genuine empathy for the frustration that it feels like after you have a big confrontation like that, and all you want to do is beat somebody into the dirt. And then you lose, and then you have to try to be sportsmanlike afterwards. So I thought of you with that, though, because I was wondering if you had ever gotten in that situation where you get in a fight in a game or in practice or something, and you get so angry that you just can't function, and it gets worse and worse because you're so angry.
Oh, yeah. I used to, because I felt like I went through this stretch in college where I felt like I was so dialed in because of this like rage that I was like tapping into, that I felt like I had to be irate all the time to really be like at my peak potential. And then you realize after a while, when you're playing legitimate athletes, that's just not sustainable, you know, after a while, because they're too good.
That's something that I actually thought of with Bill O'Brien, because I used to be a much angrier person than I am now. And there is a part of you that feels like it's some special skill or some asset that you have.
Yeah.
And it's really damaging, because what ends up happening is it's almost like a drug or any other kind of crutch where it'll get you through situations. And you think because you get through the situation that it must have been good for you.
Yeah.
When in fact it like leaves a trail of devastation, the same way like cocaine or alcohol or anything else you would do to try to get through a situation. And O'Brien, I think, is like that. I agree. Yeah, he thinks he wins arguments. He probably thinks that, you know, he gets people to see things his way when really he just steamrolls them.
It's good. I mean, you know, when you're playing, if you have that kind of compartmentalization and you can turn it on at the right time, I mean, it gives you that like shot of adrenaline. But there are too many, especially when you're like at a more cerebral position, like offensive line, or if you're like a defensive specialist that actually reads the plays and knows what's going on, you can't just be out of control like that.
Yeah.
I remember when we were playing, when you and I were playing together, and we were playing the Dolphins, and it was, I don't know if you remember when, whoever was playing, I think it was Todd Wade, got injured and our left tackle came in and it was like Brad Bedell or someone from Green Bay, and Jason Taylor was still playing at like a relatively high level. Like he was still doing it. And you just knew the moment that happened that it was about to go from bad to way worse.
Yeah.
And the very next play was a sack fumble, maybe also a touchdown. They like picked it up and ran it back to like the 10 yard line or whatever. And I remember I decided to take that opportunity to try to just obliterate Zach Thomas. Like, not in a clean way really at all. Like the play was basically over and I was like, I am just going to light this guy up, like whatever. And I got him like pretty clean, and he gets up and he turns around and he just very calmly walked up to me and he was like, how long you been playing? And I was like, it's my rookie year. And he goes, yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
And I was like, that hurts, mom. you're not mad. You're disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh man, that's all right.
Man, I'm glad you told me that story because, the center for the Andre Garrod, is that how you pronounce it? The center for the Cowboys?
Dallas.
Andre Garrod. I hope I'm not mispronouncing.
I always say Gerard, but I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, his rookie year, his first game was the Texans' first game ever versus the Cowboys. Man, I had forgotten about this.
He's good.
Glad you brought that up. Okay, so he's playing center, and he's a big guy. Like, I thought he should have been a guard or a tackle, or I guess a guard, because he was just too big to be a center. And yeah. I was kind of working him over. I was having a really good game, and, you know, he's a center, a rookie, first game ever. So he was out of his league in that moment. And I kept telling him, I was just messing with his brain a little bit. I was like, dude, you got a chance, but you're too big. They got to move you to guard. This is just that. This is not the position for you. Just you're good, buddy. You'll be all right. But man, this is just they're fucking you right now by having you play center. And you know, I didn't really think anything of it. He goes on, develops into a really good player, you know. And 5 years later, last game I ever played at the start of the snap. The start of the game, like after our first snap, he says something like, Hey Seth, am I still too big? And he wasn't saying it like, you know, like I'm gonna kick your ass, old man, or anything. But he was just kinda he was reminding me. And I was like, yeah, I remember. I was like, man, you did all right, you proved me wrong. And then like three plays later, he's trying to reach me on a stretch zone and I plant my foot in the turf, tear my ACL, and I'm done. So I got to call him up about that. I should have him on.
Forgot that was that game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually felt bad about, as I was reflecting on it, as I was getting carted into the locker room, I actually felt bad for having said that when he was a rookie. Like I should have said something to him after the game about saying like, hey, I'm just messing with you, man. You know, like you're going to be all right. And I think I did say something kind of like that in the game, but I probably should have really like sought him out on the field afterwards. And
probably.
Yeah. But he did all right. Maybe it was what spurred him on. Maybe I should take credit for all of his Pro Bowls.
Yeah. I was going to say, actually, the best way to spin that is that he owes all of his success to you.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? You know who did that? Since we were talking about Justin Reed earlier.
Are you about to just show me a list of people that owe all their accolades to you?
These are people I've insulted along the way that use
since
that.
You brought this up. All these people owe their success to me.
That's going
to
do. I'm going to be doing a parenting seminar where it's all about belittling your children to instill a sense of desperation in them.
I think that's good. I mean, it definitely wreaks havoc after they're 30, but before then, at least they make it big.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago versus the Browns, Justin Reed had a rough snap where he just had poor leverage on a tackle that Nick Chubb ended up scoring on. So Justin Reed, a safety. And Rivers McCown is a blogger who writes about the Texans. He tweeted out a video of it and said, Justin Reed, box player, huh? Sorry about your fantasy teams. Sorry about your fantasy teams because Nick Chubb stepped out of bounds right before the touchdown just to seal the game right then. Justin Reed quote tweeted him and said, STFU, shut the fuck up, asinine punk. Called Rivers McCown an asinine punk. So Rivers, who after that changed his screen name to asinine punk, he responded to Justin Reed and said, use it and prove me wrong, hope you do. And Rivers is a Texans fan, you know, he's a fan blogger, he's a really, really good writer. But anyways, Justin Reed during this last week, Anthony Weaver has his kind of blow up in the press conference. The players are all kind of mum for the most part. Justin Reed goes out and has a really good game, has his first sack in his NFL career, made some really physical plays. And then immediately after the game, tweets Rivers McCown and says, "I appreciate you. I took the criticism to heart and had something to prove today. Salute." Which is a pretty cool, like, not passive aggressive or ironic or anything at all there. Like, I'm impressed that he was mature enough about it. There's part of me that kind of wishes that he weren't that affected by a fan blogger.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of like the arc there was interesting. The resolution came out okay, but you're sort of like, we shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Yeah. Like you shouldn't have been up in your mentions.
No, that's a whole different dynamic too of the game that like hadn't really emerged at all when I was playing, like where people even engage. Like that's
right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. Because 2005, 2006, there was no, I think Facebook was just getting started right about then. And every now and then, like you might, I think MySpace, I think some people, nobody in the league had a MySpace unless they were guys that were into party promotions and stuff. You had a few guys that were like either, you know, want to be DJs or whatever. They might have a MySpace page, but it was nothing like that to the point now where Roddy White talked smack about the Falcons versus the Saints before the game or tweeted something about it. Then Sean Payton retweeted it after the game.
Like, well, the difference, the incentive structure now is so different. Like you're incentivized in a lot of ways to engage like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like
monetarily,
monetarily or even just to promote whatever you might perceive to be like your own brand or something. It's like, there's a weird, it's a different animal. I mean, whereas like in the past, it kind of felt like you were only, unless you were one of the most premier players who could get away with that.
You were representing the team and the team alone, right? Yeah, totally. That's where I, like, as a player, I kept my mouth shut. Because a few times I said things on the media that were even just taken out of context to the point where I started being really boring and bland in the media because I didn't like it whenever I said anything colorful, somebody would take it out of context somewhere.
Right.
And say it was bulletin board material. So I just stopped where you're right. It's a little bit more like the WWE now. There's like a promotional aspect to it. And I think even just a lot of the coaches, Peyton's older than you and I, obviously, but a lot of the coaches are, I think they're more cool with it because they understand that they have to, because their players are in that generation and they've just had to adapt.
Yeah. Especially like, I think you see it where it crops up at the college level and then they just can't, once that's taken root, you're not getting rid of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they've grown up with it their whole lives. Like it's not going away. Yeah.
All right, man. I'm going to go get my balls chopped apart apparently tomorrow. That's not what's happening. Literally, anybody that's getting hernia surgery is not that big a deal. What do we call you? You have elevated testicles?
Yeah, I got elevated balls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can they relax that with like Botox or something?
What? Did you just like pick a random quick thing or something?
No,
Botox?
No, because that's what they'll do. That's how Botox works. It like paralyzes. I think it paralyzes the muscles in your face, and that's what relaxes the wrinkles. I think that's why women with a lot of Botox can't make facial expressions and everything.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, so you mean if they literally went like subcutaneous and give you injections
and just inject your little muscles there?
I haven't. There's an element. It's like the like if I'm really married to like the aesthetics of it, I'm like, man, I really want like some deep, low hanging balls. I feel like later in life,
when you're 70, they're going to be so normal looking.
I know.
The balls of a 45-year-old. Women,
look at these balls.
The old folks talk about you. His balls were above his glands, penis still.
Guys, still killing it, dude. How long are you gonna be out of commission?
I'm going back to work on Wednesday. I'm gonna broadcast from home.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, I asked Twitter, and a few of my followers were teachers. Said that they went back the next day and they just sat the whole time. They taught while sitting. And I felt like that's the same as me talking on the radio for 4 hours.
Yeah,
so that I don't get harassed by any adolescents. So
but isn't it like when you genuflect, it can like you feel something, right? I mean, that's like the, so if you're talking and you get animated, I would think that you can, I don't know.
When I genuflect, you like when I inflect, like when I, genuflect like when is just, like, isn't genuflect like bowing down in abeyance to somebody?
Oh, I thought it was just like an overly animated.
That's like, a gesticulation.
You're right.
Yeah. Genuflect. I was trying to like,
What did I say?
I don't genuflect that nobody know how. That's how I operate.
Seth, I think we've learned that I don't talk to people that know bigger words than me very often. So
you just roll through it.
I'd appreciate it if you would just let that go.
All right, Mr. Coconuts. Next week we'll actually talk like super, super serious football. Like we'll get down to business. We'll have nothing but boring and bland stuff to say for a good 78 minutes.
I would love that. Yeah, I would like to really get into the weeds on that.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.